Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a weekly podcast to keep you up to date on what's new on our cloud platform, Microsoft Azure. Your hosts, Cynthia Crane, Evan Basilik, Suji DeMello, Kendall Roden, Kel Teeter, and Russell Young discuss a different service or solution on each show, with subject matter experts to explain how to get started, how different services work, and how to make decisions in tricky scenarios. You can find out more about our podcast at azpodcast.com or follow us on Twitter at Azure Podcast.
Well, welcome back to the Azure Podcast. This is episode number 368, being recorded on the 10th of March, 2021, with special guests Anavi Nahar. I'm Sujit, and on Teams with me, I have Cynthia, Kale, and of course, our special guest, Anavi, who we're going to get to in just a minute. But before that, let's just catch up on the news from the Azure space this week. Cynthia, I believe you and Kale put some stuff on that. Do you want to get started?
Sure, I can get started. I think the first and foremost, there was Ignite. So a lot of things came out, and we'll definitely put the link in the show notes because there's just way too many for us to go through. And one that I wanted to highlight is around Azure Communication Services. I personally did not know this existed, but it's pretty cool. What you're able to do essentially is to leverage APIs and SDKs within your application, and you'll be able to either send SMS messages or have video chats directly on your website or whatever application you're building, within all the secure and compliant framework that Azure provides. And the other benefit is that then your customer or whoever you're trying to interact with does not need to download a different application. And they can also leverage existing identities. They don't have to set up a new account just so that I can chat with Suji the mechanic. So that's really interesting. And they also announced preview for interoperability with Teams. So you're also able to open it from Teams and interact with that as well.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, the ACS, I've used the SMS feature in a side app that I'm working on, and it was 3 lines of code, and I was able to send SMS messages. It's super easy. I definitely recommend it. Thank you. Kale, I believe you put some stuff in there.
Yeah, I got 4 things this week. The first one's around disk storage. But to be real, it's kind of like a common theme, you know, in the cloud, right? We have a lot of services that can scale horizontally, which is one of the preferred ways to kind of scale out an application. But then when you start talking about scaling up, what options do you have? And there's some new features, especially around our premium SSD model, which a lot of customers are using. There was an announcement last April, I believe it was, around this disk bursting for SSD drives. That's been extended to larger sizes now, so people can use like much bigger disks to kind of pull that off. There's also been some changes around like how you can, you know, move between tiers more easily, especially in the premium SKUs. And what I mean by scaling earlier, when I was saying, is like we have a lot of workloads that not just bursting, but we do have specific times where we need like a lot of performance, and then maybe other times when we don't. And being able to easily move between those tiers is important, you know, from a cost perspective for your app. So it's a really cool feature. People should go take a look at that. The second one's a pretty much a foundational one. Mark Rusinovich talking about the Azure Trusted Launch for virtual machines, which is if you've been around PCs for a while even and seen the evolution. I know me and Sajid are pretty old, so we probably have seen these. But back when we had BIOS, where we didn't have all this fancy, you know, security around the operating system, you know, it was a bit more of the Wild West, I would say. But you know, today we have much more like trusted platforms for, you know, the anti-loader and things like that in Windows when you boot up your system. So you have a lot more features to make sure that you're not being compromised with like rootkits or I guess they call them bootkits now. And this is an extension into the cloud to virtual machines for that, which is super cool. I'll go through these other ones quickly. The other one actually lines up with our networking discussion today, but it's a talk about Azure routing preferences. And the options that customers have for routing both are to and from internet traffic from Azure, and being able to kind of customize if that's using internal networks or the global network or, you know, ISPs and things like that. So nice write-up about the flexibility we have there to route your traffic where you want to. And then the last one's around developers, which is kind of a general one, but we've had Donovan on the podcast before. Great guy on the DevOps side, and he has a really nice write-up about all the new stuff, most modern, you know, kind of ways that we're empowering developers, whether it be with GitHub, Visual Studio, obviously Azure and the Power Platform, kind of walking through some of the newer offerings there for people who are building apps on the cloud. And it's pretty awesome. So take a look at that.
Yeah. And then the last one is, and this is actually really cool. And I actually have a conversation going with the PMs already on this. We will get them on the show, but we just announced a new virtual machine scale set orchestration model, right? So it, you know, it used to be you had traditional ISVMs where we had AV sets and you could do a certain set of redundancy with those. And VMSS brings, you know, fast scale and some of that capabilities, but you lose some of the things that you have with availability sets and fault domains with, you know, standard ISVMs. What we're doing is bringing those closer together now. Now, I don't have the details. We will have them on the podcast after. There's a whole bunch more capability. This is sort of the initial launch of this. There's a whole bunch more capability coming over the next few months. And that team has promised to come on after they release all their cool stuff. I tried to beg them to come on and give us the scoop, but they like their jobs. So, you know, they wouldn't come on. But yeah, so that'll come downstream soon.
Awesome. Thanks, Evan, for covering that. So I think that's a good roundup. Let's turn the mic over to our special guest, Anavi, today. Anavi, thank you for joining us. Please go ahead and introduce yourself to our listeners, what you do at Microsoft, what you're passionate about, and we'll take it from there.
Hey, thanks so much, first of all, for having me, everyone. Super excited to be here. As mentioned, I'm Anavi Nahar, and I lead the Azure Load Balancer product group. I've been at Microsoft, I don't want to say this out loud publicly, almost 5 years now. Technically, I'm still in my first job out of school, so it's hard to believe. I guess time flies when you're having fun, if I'm being super cliche. I'm super passionate about, you know, just helping customers get to their end goals at work. But then outside of work, I'm getting more and more, focusing more and more, I should say, on my carbon footprint, how I can reduce it a bit more, going zero waste, as the mainstream media calls it, and things like that. So it's great to kind of see when Microsoft also releases things like lowering carbon footprints or emissions, and then getting our footprint more closer to neutral. So it's kind of cool to work at a company that, you know, you're passionate about not just what you do in your day job, but then also outside of it. So that's a little bit about me, but then super excited here to talk about all things LB.
Yeah, actually, I will have to plug. We had some shows over the last 3 or 4 months talking about some of the carbon neutral work that Microsoft is doing. So, you know, encourage the audience that hasn't heard those, although everybody should be listening to every show we've ever published all the time. But if you have missed a couple, there's some really good ones over the last, you know, last 3 or 4 months.
Wasn't that a rule? I think that was one of the tests I had to pass before I joined.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, you had to catch one all 367 to show up, right?
It gets harder every time.
Yeah, so, you know, load balancers, I consider them to be one of the most fundamental services in Azure, right? That goes alongside, I guess, storage or networking or VNets, things like that. So give us the latest status on load balancers. I mean, you know, they've been around for a long time, but where are we at in that journey, and maybe what's coming up?
Absolutely. So great question. So just to kind of give a lay of the land, right? As you mentioned, load balancers or Azure LB is really the fundamental building block, right? Much like virtual networks, much like public IPs, much like really storage, as you mentioned too. You shouldn't be building in Azure without some sort of a load balancer. And then of course, from my bias side, I would say you should use Azure LB. But the reason for that is when you're moving, let's take a simple example, right? Whether it's a website, everybody can relate to a website and something tangible. I always try to give real world examples so people are able to take tangible examples away with them. So think about any website, right? Like I wanted to do one like golowaste.com, right? Because like I said, I'm passionate about that. Now, if I'm building this website and I just say, hey, I put it on a virtual machine and I put a public IP in front of it and I'm done. And next thing you know, maybe you know, there's an outage or some sort, or my VM goes down for a variety of purposes, which can totally happen. My website is down. Now, this seems like trivial if when I'm telling you about my passion project of GoLowWaste.com, but think of the real world applications when customers are in Azure, right? That could be banks. That could be you're trying to pay your mortgage. That could be retailers during Black Friday. And we really don't want to set customers up to have this, what we call a SPOF or a single point of failure. So all really a load balancer is giving you that sense of redundancy. But not only that, taking it to the next level of when you do need to scale out, right? Like before the Black Friday rush, a lot of our retail customers need to scale out like crazy, but they don't usually need that throughout the rest of the period, or maybe when they don't have their peak sales event. So why should they have to pay for all of that compute over the period of time when they don't need it? So with their load balancer, they're able to, and coupled with VMSS and now with VMSS Flex too, that Evan was talking about, just taking that power of scaling and bringing it to the cloud. And apart from that, a lesser known fact actually about load balancer. So load balancer is a product, right? The customer facing product. And then there's two SKUs, basic and standard. Standard gives you the power of availability zones, better redundancy and reliability, as well as these advanced metrics. There's another piece to it. So no matter what, even if you don't go and deploy a Azure load balancer from the portal, let's say, you're still using the software load balancer, and that's what we internally call SLB2 infrastructure, right? That infrastructure is the one that's powering like Azure regions from the ground up, every single public IP, and then also Azure load balancers, right? Now think of the scale that's at, and that's massive scale that's battle tested by our first party services. You may know them as like Teams, Bing, all of these services are already using it, and we're able to take that goodness, package it up into Azure Load Balancer and really deliver it to our customers.
So you talked about load balancers and VMs and VM schedule sets that sits behind it. How is the idea of load balancing same or different when we're talking about IaaS versus PaaS?
Yeah, that's a great question. So in our model, so I've like we call, you know, classic or and then ARM, which is the latest deployment model. So initially we had a load balancer packaged with our cloud services in our V1 model, I would say. And then now we've really separated because as we move to things like beyond IaaS, right, not just VMs, but also containers. And that's why we release things like IP-based load balancing, where instead of putting a VM or a virtual machine in the skill set in the backend, you can directly just say, hey, here's my private IP. And that private IP could point to really any resource at the end of the day. So I would say the big difference is A, flexibility, and then B, how you configure it and really the scale you're able to achieve. Because in our cloud services model, which is also PaaS, as you mentioned, and that model was really bundled together with the cloud service as a whole. So there wasn't this separation of, hey, this is my load balancer and I can use it as a resource. It's kind of like you get it as part of the package. So in a way, you're not even realizing that you have it. So then when you go to deploy it, you're not sure what the configuration should be. So separating that out, I think, makes it super clear. As well as gives that bonus or added flexibility. And now as we move and push more and more towards the container space, gaining that sense of added flexibility, I think definitely helps.
Yeah, one question I had too around load balancers and maybe for our listeners, you know, there's different types of layers of where a load balancer can work, right? Like at the application level or maybe at the network level, like even lower level stuff. Where do these that you're mentioning here, like the Azure load balancer, is that, should I think about that something at the IP level or is this at the application level? How should I think about that?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So this is what we call, like we traditionally say it as like layer 4 or network load balancer. So really this is, I would say, as closest to the Azure stack or the Azure platform as it gets, right? Whereas we have our application gateway, which is more layer 7 or the application layer load balancer, similar to AFD, which is also at the layer 7. And then just maybe sneak peek for insider information, kind of for the Azure podcast viewers only, or listeners, I should say. The application gateway at the end of the day is really Azure load balancer packaged with additional functionality and the cool things that you're able to do with App Gateway today. and sent over to customers, right? That's why you'll see actually at Ignite, we launched this thing called Azure Load Balancing Options, not just to answer your question, Kale, but just customers in general, right? If I'm trying to get that scale and that redundancy and that reliability with a load balancing service, which one should I use? And so we've launched this thing called Azure Load Balancing Options and Solutions. That way you're able to see, hey, okay, I'm building more of a layer 7 application. I should probably use this. But if I want things like client IP preservation or I want a static IP that I own, I probably should use Azure LB. If I want the lowest latency, like I said, we're closest to the stack, you probably want to use Azure LB. That being said, though, if you want to do things like wildcard listeners and all of the cool things that App Gateway allows you to do, that's probably why you want to use that too. But then if you want global scale at the edge, you probably want to use AFD. And then my saying is you always want to use DNS, man. Don't rely on IP. So you always use DNS. So like you're using Traffic Manager no matter what or any DNS-based solution. So while technically you could, you know, put that as a load balancing solution, and I think we have on our public documentation, I would say, man, always use DNS.
What's the you as you were talking about that, Anavi, some of the things you talked about, like App Gateway. App Gateway is a thing that gets deployed for each customer, right? Each customer has their own set of resources that make up their App Gateway. The Azure Load Balancer is a whole different beast from that perspective, right? This is a massively multi-tenant service. It's sort of, I guess, closer to storage in that context. Right. I mean, can you talk about sort of how it, you know, what it actually gets represented as?
Yeah, that's a great question. So like I was talking about earlier, right, just pulling onto some relevant threads here. So we had the infrastructure component that you're using SLB, the infrastructure, no matter what you do. Right. So whether you like it or not, you're getting a piece of what my team and I work on. Right. That's just part of Azure. And that's similar to storage. It's just from the get go. It's built from the ground up. It's the DNA of Azure. Now, the cool thing about Azure Load Balancer is exactly right. It's multi-tenant. And what that means is really we're not spinning up a dedicated instance for customer A and then customer B, for example. Now that could be, like, depends on how you view it. To me, it's definitely a benefit because we're reducing the level of fault. Your fault domain is significantly reduced or increased, I should say, in terms of the fact that for a lot of things really need to go down for your load balancer to be impacted, right? It's not a set of two redundant VMs in the background or a set of VMSS in the background. It's really what is in our Azure infrastructure's DNA in the background. Now, what that means is the fact that when you go deploy a load balancer from the portal, you know, you get your load balancer object and you get your front end IP, you have your load balancing rules that you assign, and then you have your back end pool, which, like I said, could be VM, VMSS, or any IP based resource. What that's communicating to the Azure stack is really, hey, plumb this IP, which is the front end of the load balancer, and then the back end is this, right? It's just this configuration that's really getting sent to the platform. It's not like we're suddenly now advertising this new IP for this one customer that requested it. So that's really cool, and that's actually how Teams, so Microsoft Teams, with the recent COVID spike that we all saw across the world, that's really how they were able to scale, right? Because we were able to then give this huge infrastructure and they were able to use, not only use that, but leverage and get to the kind of scales that Microsoft got to. So it's super cool and part of, I guess, being part of the team because, you know, you're actively helping Microsoft as a whole, but then also external customers who deploy a load balancer. So hopefully that gives some insight on how we not only run SLB, the infrastructure from the ground up, but then also cater to teams, et cetera, because it's multi-tenant and because you're able to spread it across multiple customers.
That also explains my customers ask for this all the time when we're engaged with them is go get me a trace on the load balancer because they think it's, you know, something like, you know, on premises, you might have an F5 or it's, you know, a set of VMs like the App Gateway. And I have a patented way I respond, but it's like, well, that's, not really a thing that you can do.
Yeah, you know? Totally. So, yeah. It's not an appliance, right? At the end of the day, F5s and all of our amazing partner load balancers that we have on the Azure Marketplace, they're also using Azure LB under the covers, right? And so really when we're saying that ultra low latency and high bandwidth, it's saying, hey, like this is what really everything else that you probably are going to use is using anyway. And yeah, that makes it really hard. It's kind of like, okay, go and get me the trace of like everything that's going on from the Azure data center up to my IP, which is a little bit complicated. But that being said, I mean, it's a valid customer ask. And so we are working in that direction. So we've done a bunch of stuff in the metric space, things like snap port exhaustion, right? For outbound connectivity, that's a big one that our customers face. And so we're actively listening and building metrics, not only through our resource health center or resource health check that you'll see on the portal for service health, but then we're also trying to come up with a health model for LB, right? How does a customer know that, hey, my health, my resource or my load balancer is healthy? Even taking all of that complexity of the multi-tenant infrastructure of the Azure DNA and really simplifying it to, hey, what do I need to know, right? There's a bunch of data in the world, but how can we make it meaningful for customers to then only impact their resource? And that's the direction that we're slowly moving into. So I'm super excited to start being able to answer that question when they ask us that.
Yeah, so I know you mentioned that the load balancer is layer 4 and things like App Gateway are layer 7. So I have a quick trivia question here. What are the other layers in there? Who can tell me that?
Of the OSI model? Oh, God, I'm literally going to pull this up.
Not pulling up aloud.
You should put this on Twitter for our listeners, Ajit, and then we'll send them something.
I wrote it down from memory. I don't know if this is correct, but I believe after app comes session, which is 6. Then there's presentation, which is 5, which is really HTML and things like that. Then there's TCP, which is 4, right? That's the ILB one. And I think 3 is IP, right? Is that correct?
Yeah,
and then there's data before that, and then the physical should be right below.
Yes.
I'm thinking of the Azure data center, and so that's how I like remember. I don't actually know, but it was like, this is how we built our data center, so it must be exactly the OSI network model.
All right. The question I had for you, Anavi, is, you know, I did the IP load balancing sample. I was just trying that yesterday. And I was surprised that I couldn't put a DNS name there. You said that you would rather have DNS, but yet you can't enter a DNS in the IP load balancing. Sorry if I put you in a tough spot there, but why is that?
Yeah, so that's a great question. And that's kind of the direction we're moving to, right? Like my stance and my principle, I would say, as I always follow, is you want to do the 80-20 rule, right? You want to get 80% of the kind of functionality out there and then pivot and get the fine-tuning out there. So that's the direction that we're moving into in terms of flexibility. The thing with DNS is having it in the back end as well as the front end is going to be a little bit challenging. And so just how we decide to do that will be a little bit complicated. So without saying too much, I will say that we want to move to a direction where we're making flexibility possible. And this has actually been one of a big ask from customers in terms of, hey, you know, not just for front end, but you'll be surprised when you look at the data, right? Even for the front end IP, I know you're talking about the back end instances. Even for the front end, a lot of our customers still rely on IP addresses, right? So we really want to, in a way, set customers up for success from the get-go, but it's really hard to do that when we didn't, like Azure has, like, you know, for all of this debt that we've kind of collected in a way for that space. So it's really what we want to do to intuitively complete the full scenario, and that's kind of what we're incrementally hoping to move towards. But yeah, for the front end, until then, always back the IP by DNS, and then for the back end, we'll get back. Stay tuned.
Sounds good. Thanks.
One other thing that I wanted to mention with Ignite kind of just, you know, just behind us recently is we had a bunch of different updates. Like I said, the load balancing options to consolidate and make it easy for customers because we're pushing towards this end-to-end, as we call it, methodology or practice to make sure that it's not just a customer using an Azure load balancer or an app gateway or any sort of a load balancing service, right? A customer is going to Azure. And so you'll see this push of us moving towards that model. But then other than that, yeah, we also GA'd IP-based LB And then we previewed cross-region load balancer, right? So what that now means is your Azure load balancer can not only be in one region, but it's also now global, right? So same thing, we're able to take that multi-tenant infrastructure and the power of this beast of a platform, if I steal Evan's word there for a bit, we're now able to give that at a global scale. Now, you're probably wondering, okay, Anavi, like, that's great, but then what about AFD, right? That's a global load balancer as well. Now, the difference here lies in a little bit of the details, so bear with me as I get a little technical. So with AFD, 100%, if you want to get to the closest edge location or you're closest to your customer.
One second, Anavi. AFD, our listeners might not know what that is.
I'm just like my typical Azure language here. AFD is our Azure front door, right? It is our layer 7 edge to load balancer as we position it, right? This is what's going to give you that edge acceleration pretty much. And like App Gateway, it's at the layer 7. But the difference is that with AFD, the IP address or the front end is not something that a customer can control. It's not a static IP like you have for an Azure load balancer or application gateway. So we always in Azure, like I said, our philosophy is, you know, people are wondering, hey, why do you have so many LBs? Why can't you just give me the one load balancer and be done with it, right? But that across all of our customers, right, we have to cater to all of the scenarios. And so it's important to make sure we're giving all of our customers collectively, empowering everyone to build their solutions. So the difference there lies in, yes, they're both global. However, in the Azure load balancer global case, you're able to control that IP address and you're able to get analytics or details about the client. Where is this IP coming from? With App Gateway and then AFD, connections or traffic is terminated, and then the device or the appliance reinitiates the connection to send it in the back end, right? So really, you should think of Azure Load Balancer as what I call a transparent or a pass-through network load balancer. It's not going to change anything, right? Like if you're telling me, hey, Anavi, and I'm an LB, like do this, I'm like, okay, I'm just going to go ahead and do it, right? Whereas with App Gateway or AFD, it's going to be, hey, okay, you're telling me to do this. I'm going to terminate your connection, and I'm going to initiate a new connection. We'll do exactly what you want, but then you're able to do things like adding things to the headers, and that's how you get kind of the more sophisticated layer 7 functionality. So that truly is what the difference is, and that's why we have a suite of load balancing solutions, but we totally understand that it could get complicated for maybe a novice user, and that's why we are also launching a portal solution. So you could go to the Azure portal and you know, go to the load balancer and it'll say, help me choose, and you're able to kind of answer basic questions of, okay, like, what type of an application are you using? Do you care if it's regional or global? Do you care about things like, are you super latency sensitive? And it'll answer all of these. Once you answer all of these basic questions, it'll say, hey, Azure recommends this, right? That way it makes it a lot easier for customers to be able to choose and then pick the best solution for them.
Yeah, that's super cool. Sorry. So that's super cool. Like, is that like an app that's outside of the portal, or it's like in the portal itself? Like, how will users experience that thing? That sounds really awesome.
Yeah, it's super freaking cool. And it's actually part of the portal. And we want to, for discoverability, if you literally just search load balancer, it'll come up for you as like a help me choose type option. So yeah, it's natively integrated with our load balancer. I believe it's in preview right now, and then we'll GA it, and then it tells you about load balancer, traffic manager, front door, as well as App Gateway. But to me, the selling point, like you kind of hit the nail on the head, is that questionnaire, right? It's just basic questions. I don't have to know about what layer, and I don't have to be an expert at Sujeet's trivia question of the OSI model, but I'm still able to pick a solution for me, even though I may not have that networking maybe expertise. And that's the bulk of our customers, right? Nobody, if you're not a network expert, if you're not the IT person, if you're not the networking guru at your company, you're not really going to have that level of detail. And honestly, you shouldn't, right? With the technology, we should empower you to just have that information.
Anavi, from an enterprise perspective, how should they treat the load balance, especially enterprise, if they want to make sure that they have disaster recovery taken into account? So what's the geo redundancy story around load balances?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we always, whenever, you know, we're talking to customer, we always say you want to have redundancy within regions and then across regions. So within regions, you're able to do it with availability zones. So standard load balancer, aka Azure load balancer, we're able to have different availability zones, right? And Azure is expanding its availability zones very aggressively, as you'll see. And so each AZ, so the front end IP of that load balancer, it's such that it's advertised from all of the availability zones, so all three of them. That means that even if an availability zone goes down, your load balancer front end is still active, and the back ends will just be redirected to instances in those load balancers. So that's at a regional level, right? So if you have a regional outage within a region, you're good. That's one layer. The second layer is global. What if my region completely goes down and I have some sort of an issue? And that's kind of also why we have this cross-region load balancer, because now if you have to visualize it, you have this global LB on top of your regional LBs. So if an entire region goes down, that regional workload is down, but then the global front end is able to redirect to other regions. So those are the two methods of redundancy that we talk about. But then apart from that, we also talk through a primary and a backup region, things like that. But then also the fact that even within those workloads, you don't want to have just one virtual machine, for example, in one AZ, right? You want to have like a scale set and things like that. So there's multiple dimensions to it. At the end of the day, it all comes down to like what you can tolerate as an application. And usually for enterprise customers, they can't tolerate either a regional or like within a region or an AZ failure, I would say. So that's how we usually recommend it. And that really brings the beauty of standard load balancer, because before that, you would have to have three front end IPs in each of the availability zones, and then somehow tie that to like your DNS and then load balance. Here, it's just that one IP, right? And you can scale out or scale in behind that one IP. And now with the global aspect, that's still the one IP. So if I want to, like maybe you're a company and you suddenly are going to grow across regions, right? It doesn't matter because your IP and then tied to your DNS is going to be the same, which I think is really the true, I would say it's the most beautiful aspect of the global load balancer, if I say so myself.
Yeah, I feel like that global initiative, I'll call it, but the ability to use this stuff like cross region is probably becoming more important, right? As our regions grow, right? There's so many regions now and they continue to keep growing. So it's like you have more options now, right? It used to be there was only a few regions and now there's very many, right? So I think this is awesome, right? That you can do that across the global.
Yeah, we're super excited about it. And another like kind of byproduct that it became, right? Let's say you even start with that one region. If it's behind that global load balancer, you can still expand, right? That way there's lesser things that change to the front end, to your clients. But then in the back end, you can be like, hey, I have another region, but you would never know because if you're, you know, accessing the front end from a certain region because of our routing algorithm, you'll always be routed to the closest region to ensure it's the lowest latency or the quickest connection. So yeah, it's just kind of like this magic that happens behind the front end, which is pretty cool.
That's great. Thank you very much for that. I was reminded of, I think it was the global director who makes that. Like there's the local director and the global director. It used to be two appliances before. Kale, do you remember what I'm talking about? Or is that F5 or Cisco? I think you had Cisco had that, right? Their load balancing product.
I believe
it was
so.
A local director and a global director. It kind of has the same functionality. So glad to see that we have that. This is awesome. So is there any news, any new things that are upcoming that you want to share with us before we wrap up over here, Navi?
Yeah, I think one thing that you'll see us invest in really deeply, right, talking about Cisco and kind of Checkpoint and F5s in our discussion, right? We're very partner focused at Azure and then Microsoft as a whole, right? We want to make Azure the best cloud for all of our partners. And so if you'll see that upcoming in the load balancer space, as well as the changes that we're making for them to integrate as closely and as best possible as just regular appliances or as we say, native or first party Azure appliances, right? Your app gateway, firewall, things like that. We want to give our partners in Azure that method. And really the Azure load balancer is not just, my customers aren't just internal customers or external customers and enterprise customers, direct customers, startups, things like that. It's also my partner NVA ecosystem, right? And so you'll see a big push in this area, at least in the load balancer space coming shortly, because we want them to integrate as best as possible to give you that end scale, right? There are some features that, you know, Azure Load Balancer doesn't have, but F5 might have, and Checkpoint might have, and these other solutions might have. But we want to get the best to our customers no matter what, right? And so we want to build this partner ecosystem to be even more strong. So you'll see definitely that coming up in the space. And then we also want to, like I said, do better on our enhance hands, I should say, our health monitoring system and make sure we proactively inform customers of issues before they happen as opposed to retroactively, right? So being more proactive in the health space. So those are the two big pushes that you'll see coming up. And I wish I could say more, but I think it's kind of nice to keep some mystery alive too.
Yeah. Especially the one with the partners. I appreciated that because I said I was in the portal looking for the load balancer. And when you search for it, ours is not nowhere near the first or even the second page. It's like, you know, the Azure load balancer is much later on the list. So it's not like we're pushing ours, right? We're giving everybody, all the partners, an equal say and play in this space. So I thought that was pretty cool.
Totally. We're like a partner first, customer first strategy. And I think you'll see that more and more, or more explicitly as well going forward. But yeah, great. It's just, hey, pick what you want, right? We want to bring you, as long as you're using Azure and we're giving you that benefit of the cloud scale and all of those things, you know, pick your favorite LB.
I think that's it. Thank you. And if there's any links you want to share, any resources to what you spoke of, please send them over to me or to Cynthia, and we can get them on the show when we
record. Yeah, that sounds great. I'll send, put a pointer to the load balancing services overview stuff, the Help Me Choose. I think that'll be super valuable. And then some of the other latest stuff for us to read. But yeah, thanks so much for having me. This was a really great conversation, and it was fun to talk to you all about LB and the space that I work on. So thanks so much.
Thank you. Again.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any thoughts, questions, or just want to connect, find us on Twitter at Azure Podcast. Background music has been taken from ccmixer.org under the Creative Commons license. We hope you'll tune in again soon to keep learning with us.